everyone, and welcome to another fantastic episode of Classic Elder Scrolls Night. Today's record date is, what? Morndos? What the freaking heck? Yeah, it's Morndos, man. I hate Morndos, but maybe this is a reason to love Morndos a little bit. Last seed, the 18th. So, farmers out there, maybe the Cyril brothers are patting down their final grape seeds for their final harvest of the year. So, Morndos, last seed, the 18th. Our show is sponsored in part by Tweaked Audio. TweakedAudio.com. Quality headphones, 30% off. How do I do it, Avarwin? How do I get 30% off of Tweaked Audio earbuds? Well, you need our code there, buckaroo, and that is off the record, all one word. Let's not get crazy now, okay? It's okay. It's not an English test. Off the record, all one word, at Tweaked Audio, tweakedaudio.com, and by Audible, A-U-D-I-B-L-E, audible.com, audibletrial.com/Quest Gaming Network. That's the link you're going to need in order to get your free book, your free audiobook today at Audible. Audibletrial.com/QuestGaming Network. I am an idiot, and my name is Avarwin, and you're listening to me for probably about a good hour, but who cares about me? Because the big news of the week is this guy right here, KDR Mickey from the greater QGN community. Mike! What's going on, Mike?
All right, hello, Avarwin, and hello, community. We are here today, and we are going to be enjoying some nice scenery through the Oblivion game tonight. I am very happy to be here and be a member of the hosting crew for QGN now. You will be able to catch me on Mondays with Avarwin doing Classic Elder Scrolls Night. So we are going to hit up Skyrim, Oblivion, Morrowind, and Rena and Daggerfall. And, you know, we hope that you will stay with us and enjoy some of that great content.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I am looking for two brand new hosts permanently for Classic Elder Scrolls Night. Shank has left the building, and so has Crispy. We, of course, wish them well. Crispy is actually still a part of our guild in Elder Scrolls Online, so shout out to Crispy Crackers. Sorry couldn't make it, dear, for the rest of the duration of the show, but you're awesome. Brilliant, might I add, for that one episode, and we're looking forward to seeing you again in Elder Scrolls Online. Watch us live now, Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern at twitch.tv/QuestGamingNetwork. If you want to send the show an email, you can do that at elderscrollsofftherecord@gmail.com. And, Mike, look at those beautiful moons right there. Oh, my God.
I know. Yeah. The moons in this game are amazing.
Ah, oh, it's gorgeous. Find us at elderscrollsofftherecord.com and questgamingnetwork.com. You can follow us on Twitter at elderscrollsotr, also on Facebook at facebook.com/elderscrollsofftherecord, and on Google Plus, google.com/+QuestGamingNetwork. Mike, what are we playing today? What are we doing?
So today we are going to be playing Oblivion, the Elder Scrolls IV. Many of the scenes and locations in Oblivion are used in a much newer game, but we would really like to take a look at these as they're based in the time frame of the Oblivion Crisis. Today, we will be having a couple of discussion topics, and one of them is going to be What Would You Do? By Granger from the official Elder Scrolls Forum. We will have the History of a new section, where I will be presenting the history of the Chaiden Hall area. Plus, we will have a fast question of the week, and we have an email that came in this week. Avarwin, would you like to start the discussion?
Yeah, sure. So we're back in Chaiden, we're back in Oblivion right now, and one of the things that Mike had said that he was really looking to bring to the show was, you know, lore is great, but we wanted to kind of go with a more meta-factual side of the lore. because we don't necessarily get a whole heck of a lot of that. And this stuff is super interesting when you go from game to game to game and you're aware of this stuff because it's constantly being called out on in subtle ways. It's you know, you mouse over a particular NPC in one game and then you find them dead with a journal next to them in the sequel. Stuff like that. So this week, we're going to look at Chadenhall, the city of Chadenhall. And I've got it right here on the live stream. I am very close to the Roxy Inn right now, which you know, has a storied history, if you remember some of the stuff I've talked about.
Yeah, I think last time you had to see a doctor or a priest afterwards.
Something like that.
Not a good time for you, last time I remember.
No, not at all. It totally derailed me.
Especially with your, you know, very paladin-esque nature. You know, maybe if it was more of an assassin Dark Brotherhood, it would have fit the character better. But
it would have been great, but unfortunately, trying to be a holy warrior, no good when you're a vampire. It's like, you know. And then honestly, you just become an Anne Rice novel, and who wants that in their life?
those STDs that those vampires give you.
Tough to brush off. So what we're going to do is we're creating a brand new segment for this show called The History Of, and we're looking at Chadenhall. So we're actually going to walk over there. It's not too far from where we're at. And as we're doing that, we're going to have a little discussion. And then when we get to Chadenhall, we're going to break into the nitty gritty of this particular episode.
Now, you might say, why Chadenhall? You know, when Avarwin approached me on, you know, what should we do this week? I said, you know, Avarwin, I'm painting currently Chadenhall. And for those that follow me on Twitter, you know that I paint all of the different scenery and cities and villages throughout the games and post them on Twitter and send them out to friends. So that was the impetus of why we're going to do Chadenhall today. It fits in with what I'm painting currently.
Well, how far along are you with that painting?
I am probably about 40%. I've got the sky in, the mountains in, the bridges in, a couple of the buildings, one of the waterways that run through the city of Chadenhall. So we're doing pretty good.
All right. Maybe when we get out there, you can sort of like, you know, show me exactly what you've got painted so far, and we can have, like, you know, a better appreciation for it when you finally are able to release the photo or the painting that you've made on Twitter.
We'll try and get you in the position for where the screenshot would be.
Sounds great. I'm fighting a minotaur right now. It's going to suck as strong, I'll tell you that. All right, so our first discussion is, what would you do? And this comes from the official Elder Scrolls forums by Grongar. And he says, I've put Oblivion Game of the Year Edition, as well as its corresponding strategy guide, up on sale along with my other games. What? My decision for this is, I have played Oblivion and decided it was time to retire the game. I have, after all, played it for well over 3,000 hours as a pure mage. Never tried pure warrior, pure thief, or hybrid classes.
That's amazing, 3,000 hours.
As just a mage.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll get into it, but I mean, do you think he's even scratched the game at that point?
Oh my god, no. Now, there's so many other aspects of this game. To just do 3,000 as a mage and say that you've retired, I think he wasted a good portion of those hours just trying to be a mage.
I tend to agree. He goes on to say, today I thought to myself, what the hell am I doing? I placed Oblivion and the book back on my shelves as it stands. If anybody called for it today, I would probably say it was sold.
Redemption.
Indeed. My reason for doubting myself is because the thought lingers. What if I want to go back to it? What would I do without it? And honestly, I don't feel like I would be able to handle being without it if I felt the desire to play it again. The last time I actively played the game was right before Skyrim came out. I've made a few attempts to go back to it, but I usually don't last very long without pulling the disc back out, and it sits on my shelf for another few months. What would you do? This stuff is still worth money after all these years. Should I let it go, or should I keep it? What would you do, Mike?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, I'm sitting in the library room, guest room in my house, and I can see from here that I've got Neverwinter Nights, the boxes for that. I've got Riven, I've got Myst, I've got some of the old Lord of the Rings games up there. You know, I've got some of the strategy guides for them. I've got a bookshelf of nothing but Dungeons and Dragons manuals. You know, I can't believe you've got stuff that I really have like sentimental attachments to.
Riven and Myst, holy God, those came out in the late 90s.
Yeah, and I've got the three books that went with it, the novel series that went with those. But, you know, if you've put 3,000 hours into a game, even if, you know, it's just as a single class mage, you know, and you didn't get to experience anything else, you have an emotional attachment to something like that, I'm sorry to say. And I don't think that I could get rid of it. You know, I mean, heck, I've bought multiple copies of Skyrim now, you know, PlayStation, the PC, the anthology version. You know, I've got a couple over 1,000 hours in that, you know, a couple hundred hours here in Oblivion. You know, I don't think I could get rid of that kind of stuff. I mean, it's part of this guy's life.
I agree 100% on that. What would I do? I would do exactly what he did, which is admit your mistake and don't ever do it again, man. Jeez. I mean, you know, listen, I have Oblivion, a digital copy of Oblivion, sitting on my hard drive for my Xbox 360. I have digital copies of it, of Skyrim. And I have also purchased the anthology. I even have a disc version for my Xbox 360 of Skyrim as well. Elder Scrolls games are something that you sort of just make sure you always have. You know? And it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter how old these things get. I mean, I can jump into Daggerfall. I love Daggerfall. I actually enjoy Daggerfall more than Morrowind, believe it or not.
That is really amazing. I must say, I recently rebooted Morrowind, and I had bought a controller emulator. And now I'm trying to play Morrowind with a control pad now. So makes it even more interesting.
How are you enjoying Morrowind with a control pad?
I'm really enjoying it. Like with all of these games, I had come to games of this nature from the PlayStation, the original PlayStation. My first actual computer game was Pool of Radiance on a Commodore 64. But as you know, you need movement, you need that fluidity, that mouse and keyboard just, well, it has all that those extra keys. Really, I felt stymied by. Sometimes I'd hit the wrong key, and the controller has been wonderful. I use a controller for Oblivion now, for ESO. Skyrim has the native controller support. And that's really what I came to the Elder Scrolls with, was with Skyrim on the PS3. So I am really loving having a controller emulator for Morrowind.
Yeah, I enjoy that game, Morrowind, and looking forward to getting more into it. But I mean, just having an... I guess what I'm trying to say is that it's never a good idea. If you enjoy Elder Scrolls that much, where you put 3,000 hours into it, it's never a good idea to get rid of it or sell it, because you're going to come back to it at some point. I mean, these games, by playing Arena and Daggerfall, I have learned one thing about this series, and that it is utterly timeless. And as long as technology is backward compatible, these games are always going to be around.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. And even if it's not backward compatible, you look at some of the community's efforts where you've got people making, porting in Morrowind into the Oblivion engine or into the Skyrim engine, and Oblivion into the Skyrim engine. You know, and you know, whenever Elder Scrolls, I don't know, what would we like to call it? Greenshade, Grotwood.
Right.
So I'm really hoping that we go to visit the home of the Wood Elves in the next one. You know, when that comes out, that I'm sure that there'll be community members that port Skyrim into that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I know that there's people who are like, oh, you have to experience it in its native state, you know, in the original state it was sold. But I think more importantly with all of these is the stories behind them and the fact that you're living out the stories.
I would agree to both of those. I would say that it is important, while you still can, to take some of those older Elder Scrolls games and experience them in the way they were sold, just so you can have an appreciation for technology that existed back then and how far these games have come. But at the same time, if that's something that is a gate to you, and it is for some people, there are some people out there that will not pick up Daggerfall or Arena simply because it's like, that game is so old, it's like not even worth playing. Well, that's not true.
Yeah, I really have to disagree. I mean, you know, it's just for the story behind it and the experiences that you're going to see in that game, it's so worth playing. Even if it's just one time that you've played through it, just to say that you've done it.
Right. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, you've got certain movies out there that you don't even have to. I mean, as long as you're just like a person living in the modern era, I mean, you owe it to yourself to kind of watch, you know, like, you know, Jaws, and I would definitely put Lord of the Rings on there too. Some people might disagree with that, but there's definitely games. If you call yourself a gamer, there's definitely some games out there that you need to put on your list.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just look at the vitriol in the Lucas community when he went back and digitally remastered, you know, taking out the original actor who played Darth Vader to put in the new guy who was playing Darth Vader after he released the second trilogy set. When you look at the end of Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, people, you know, I myself remember going, you know, with my father to see Return of the Jedi, you know, in the theaters. You know, and having seen, you know, broadcast premieres of Empire Strikes Back. So, you know, to go back and change things like that, yes, it tells the story slightly different. There's a lot of retcon going on. But, you know, there is still that place where you want to see the original as it was, not, you know, what has changed since then.
Exactly. And, you know, to get back, I guess, to the topic at hand here, where, you know, should this gentleman sell? At least I got one of them. Should this gentleman sell his copy of Oblivion? I definitely think he made the right choice in taking that down and not doing it.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, that's that one thing that you know, yeah, he could always go out and buy another copy. You know, but for the what he's going to get from it, it's not going to be worth it, you know. And then he'll always have that regret. What should I have done? Should I have kept it? I really wish I had it. You know, by taking it off the market, he still has it. You know, what's he going to get, you know?
Exactly. And you never know. I mean, you've had it for 3,000 hours. You know, that particular box and that particular, you know, disc, it's carried itself with you this whole time. And, you know, a new copy, which you could definitely buy, or you could buy a digital copy as well, it may not be the same. And, I would never get rid of my collector's edition of Skyrim on my Xbox. I would never get rid of that. Because to me, that sort of represents my, you know, the beginning of my love of Elder Scrolls games. And, you know, I don't want to get rid of that. It's a piece of meaningful personal history. And yep, that might be the same for this individual as well. Okay. Moving on.
Looks like there's some tough battles going on there.
There certainly is. You know, I got attacked by two thieves who one of them finally, she put the kibosh on me, that's for sure.
This Minotaur definitely keeps sending all of his brothers, cousins, aunts, and uncles after you.
Yeah. This guy's a wimp. I totally got him. So let him keep his horn. All right. So, Mike, we're on our way to Chaden Hall, and we probably would have been there by now if it wasn't for the fact that I was a dope and had myself taken by two thieves. But we are on our way, and as such, I am interested. Let's hear some of the history of the city we're about to enter, the beautiful city of Chaden Hall, or should I say Chaden Hall?
Yes, something that we had discovered in our research. In France, there's a small town of Chey, C-H-E-Y. And we were pondering the concept of being that Oblivion is a neo-European setting, that we were wondering on the pronunciation, is it Chaden Hall or is it Chaden Hall? But either way that we pronounce it, the county of Chaden Hall is nestled in the intersection of the Jarrow Mountains to the north, which borders Skyrim, and the Valis Mountains to the east, which border Morrowind. It is the easternmost city in all of the Cyrodiilian Empire, and culturally, it's a fusion of the Nibenay and the Morrowind cultures. So if we were to pop open the map, we would be able to see the large Nibenay River that runs up to the Imperial City, and all of that area gives birth to the Nibenay culture, and people say that the cultures derived in the Nibenay are more related to the elves than the West Weald and the Kelovian Highlands, which have a tendency of more propensity to the human ancestry.
So you're saying that the Nibenay Valley has a very prominent history with Aeliads.
With Aeliads and the Mer culture, yeah. And then when you look at Morrowind and the number of refugees coming from Morrowind over the years, either to escape the tribunal, those that wanted to remain loyal to the Daedra princes, or those that have lost face with the families as the ruling families have changed and the houses there. So there's a large efflux of people from Morrowind into Cyrodiil, and their first stop would have been Chaden Hall.
Huh. Now let's take a look at that on the map here. So you're saying the first stop here would be to Chaden Hall. Now from where exactly? From Morrowind?
From Morrowind.
Yeah. No, you're 100% right.
Now with Oblivion, the game, in order to give you the sense of large vastness, many of the mountains that you see here are unscalable to a point. And they did a very similar thing in Skyrim, except that every so often you got to a point where you found a couple of those pathways, one to Cyrodiil, one to Morrowind, that pretty much the little things that blupped up and said, oh, you can't go any further. But, you know, same kind of concept here is that there were passes in the mountains that they decided really not to put in. You can even see right under the word Chaden Hall there, there's a little road that pretty much peters out. It would have gone directly to Morrowind.
I'm looking at that right now on the map, and yep, it's right there. Here is the city of Chaden Hall, right in the beginning here, and I've got the stables here on my left, and was that the Blackwaterside stables?
Yeah, which produce some of the best black horses in all of Cyrodiil, if you talk to the horse keeper there.
Really? So these stables here produce the best black horses in all of Cyrodiil.
That's what he says.
All right. So, and we've actually got a couple of them right here.
Yep. Now, you know, my character is not quite as noble as your character, so I have managed to steal almost every horse out of there during the course of the game. And for those that have played through for the Dark Brotherhood, you realize that you have to kill an innocent person to be approached by Lucien the Chance. And I found this out as I was walking to Chaden Hall, hoping to join the Dark Brotherhood, and I realized, oh my god, I hadn't killed anybody other than bandits and stuff like that. So I actually bumped off the stable hand that lives here too. So, not quite a nice player, but, you know.
Hey, you're achieving your in-game goals, and that's what
exactly.
It's all about.
So that lady right there by the gate entrance, she's not in my game anymore.
Aww. All right, so
back to as we were talking about. The city itself sits on the tributary of the Nimene River, the Corbolo River, which gives the city a distinct feel, as there are many boggy areas that are lush with willow trees, reeds, and beautiful the three beautiful covered bridges that are within the city proper. These bridges connect the market and trade district to the Eastern Temple District.
All right, I'm going to take a walk inside the city now.
Yep.
Now that we looked at the front of it, let's go right inside here.
And the really cool thing when you look at Chaiden Hall with the it being a walled city, not only were the stables outside, but you have small farm communities around it. There's a lord's manor outside of it that's part of a fighter guild's quest. There's the Lodge of the Thorn, I believe it's called, which is outside the walls also. So it gives you this sense of the protection of the walled city the area around it still being a thriving community.
Yeah, we just we actually had on the stream there that area you're talking about, Knights of the Thorn Lodge, something like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now, the earliest records that I could find about Chaiden Hall start in the second era, 582. This is the year before the events of Elder Scrolls Online. There was a rebellion against the local Imperial garrison after the collapse of the Second Empire. And this event itself can actually be experienced, the final aspects of it, in ESO, if you're willing to play in Cyrodiil, which I thought was really cool. Now, the interesting aspect is the change in architecture over the years. Chaiden Hall has been sacked a number of times, starting with this rebellion. During the rebellion, the city itself was more brick and stone pilings.
Really?
It had a walled city with large stone buildings and some stone bridges connecting the city. But the keep, which sits as part of the Mooton Valley keep formation, where the moot is a piled mountain of earth that is artificially formed and the keep sits upon it. That wasn't there during ESO, so it's just the lower walled city that is found there.
Okay, now this must be the keep up here that I'm walking toward.
I don't know you, and I don't care to know you.
Some of the NPCs, I guess, are a little rude around here.
Yeah, many of them are. It's one of the common complaints during this time period. There's a book that had been written by the author Alessia Otis, and she talks about all of the major cities in Cyrodiil. And concerning Chaiden Hall, she says, "Arcade, bless my body and soul. My name is Alessia Otis, and I'd like to tell you about Chaiden Hall. My first impressions of the visitor to Chaiden Hall is a broad green parkland, graceful willows along the banks of the Colabolo, neatly groomed gardens and flowering shrubs. Chaiden Hall looks prosperous, with clean, well-trimmed houses, neat stonework, ornamental with striking designs in glass, metal, and wood. But what lurks beneath this pleasant appearance? Crime, scandal, and corruption. How true it is."
Well met.
When you talk to many people around Cyrodiil about her books, you find out that she has a touch of xenophobia and racism that deals especially in Chaiden Hall with the Dark Elves, being that the Count of Chaiden Hall is a dark elf of the House Halu, and the number of orcs that populate Chaiden Hall, including the Fighters Guild leader in the area, being an orc. So
That's kind of surprising, considering the fact that we're in Cyrodiil, and a dark elf is holds lordship over a major city.
Yes, that is definitely true, and it's the only one, I believe, held by a dark elf, especially a powerful house like House Halu from Morrowind.
Now, what can you tell me about this large statue that's a part of a Chaiden Hall here? Because I'm looking around, and I don't necessarily see like a plaque at its base where it would describe like, you know, this person is historical figure for XYZ.
Yeah. So outside of the Mages Guild, if you're just outside the Mages Guild, there is a statue of Galarian the Mystic. So he is the founder of the Mages Guild.
Oh.
You meet him in ESO. He is the prime opponent of Manimarco. You've read about him in all the books. When he leaves the Isle of Arte to bring magic to the common folk.
So. Huh. Yeah, that's Galarian, all right. And funny, because Galarian is a Nord. And here we are in... You know, a city that's in Cyrodiil, very close to, close to Morrowind.
And Morrowind, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, have you done the acquiring the Mages Guild reference letters in this area?
I'm actually, no, not in this area. I am actually working on that quest, though.
So there's, this one here is kind of interesting, and definitely shows you the difference between Oblivion and Skyrim with some of the magic skills that really are lacking. So it deals with the spell Burden. So it makes it weighs you down, pretty much taking up inventory capability.
Right.
And so it definitely was a very interesting quest line to get through.
Here's some of those covered bridges that Mike was referring to as well. Very characteristic of Chaiden Hall. One of the major, features of Chaiden Hall are these covered bridges. I don't think there's really any cities that have this.
No, none of the other cities. I mean, this is reminds me a lot of English architecture with the lath and plaster and the wooden beams, but it definitely seems to have a Bavarian style. Of the post-useful castle with all of those nice little purple-colored turrets that sit upon the walls. After castles were no longer useful with the advent of cannons and gunpowder, castles became more ornamental in nature and less militaristic because with the formation of cannons, you could easily knock down the walls. So you find, like the castle that in Europe... in Germany that Disney modeled the Snow White and Sleeping Beauty castles after, with those nice high turrets on it.
Right, exactly. The high fantasy type of castles. Now, here I am in the Chapel of Arke. Is there any information in your research about the history of the Chapel of Arke here in Chaiden Hall?
Not that I was really able to find. But if you play through the game, and it's been out for years, so I guess we can say it's spoiler-free now. But there is a significant artifact that is found here if you play through the Knights of the Nine quest.
Oh, yeah.
It's at the time of the game Oblivion, it's not known that it is here. It was said to be lost during the war, and nobody really knows. But if you play through the Knights of the Nine quest, you will be able to find one of the relics here.
Yeah, was that the gauntlets that were supposed to be on the ground, or is that...
No, it should be the sword. Okay. Yeah, the gauntlets are in the Temple of Stendar.
Okay.
So, and they stayed there on the ground immovable for years.
Yeah.
Until, but the sword is buried, I believe, in the crypts.
Take a look at the well, actually I can't go into the crypts because they're red.
Yes, you have to break in.
Yeah, I don't want to go doing that. But
now outside of the temple there is another very famous person that lives in Chaiden Hall, and that would be the painter that lives there.
Let's go pay a visit.
Lianthus lives in Chaiden Hall. And he has a very well-liked quest line that a lot of people really enjoy doing, and that's A Brushwood Death.
Ah, yeah, I did that.
Well, you actually were able to get into the chapel, or into the basement, something that I have not been able to do yet.
Now, let's see. I'm looking around here for this individual's home. I'm not finding it just yet, but...
It's going to be right near the Fighters Guild.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, Lythandus. Yep.
Yeah. Now, Lythandus inherited this magical brush from his father. He uses it to enter into his paintings and paint them from the inside out, giving a sense of realism that is unmatched throughout the realm. During the quest of Brushwood Death, he's trapped in there because a thief has realized what the brush is about and enters the painting with him and steals the brush. And he sets up trolls to guard him from Lyantis coming to get the brush. And the hero has to go in, battle the trolls, and retrieve the brush so that he and the painter can escape from the painting. And it leaves Lyantis not only with being the most famous painter, but also now a very well sought after alchemist dealer, because now he has control of painted trolls' fat.
Oh, right. Yeah, well, yeah. I remember finding that stuff. Here is his house. Let's go meet the most famous painter in all of Cyrodiil. This is Wreath Lythandus.
My house is yours, friend. Please come back to visit us anytime.
Ah, yes.
I made him happy because I got his.
You saved him.
I saved him. See, and there you go. That's when they say he makes the most realistic looking paintings. You actually see an in-game depiction of that. Yes. Let me, guess, go over here. This looks like one of the stock paintings, I guess. If you take a look at that painting, all right, and then you go over here to the one he's working on, you can definitely see that they've increased the quality of the graphics on these. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is definitely, yeah. A work in progress, too, which I think is cool. You know, with all of these where they've shown artisans in Oblivion, it's not just a blacksmith, you know, pounding away at an anvil with a set thing. I mean, nowhere in the game would you be, you know, using a painter's brush and a palette to be painting for yourself. So they made this character and his movement specifically for that, which is really, really cool. And, you know, the paintings on the ground, you know, you can see the ones against the wall that aren't finished, where it's just blocked out, and the ones on the easel and the other one right next to his legs, which look amazing.
Yeah, they're absolutely beautiful. All right, let's. I was showing you the upstairs. Let me head back down, just get those back on the stream. Here are some of the paintings that Mike was talking about. And... if you watch him, those are the actions that are specific to just this character in this game. So this goes to show you. And I think this is the one and only time in this game, too, that you see an unfinished painting that's stenciled.
Yes.
All right. Anything else?
With him, since you've done the quest, we really don't have much more to do with him. And it is very cool that, he greets you and thanks you and, you know, calls you his friend. Something that I think a lot of people had complained about in Skyrim, that the lack of acknowledgement for achievements that you'd done. So, you know, you rescued him from the painting and he's very polite to you, very thankful, and acknowledges what you've done for him, which is really cool, I think.
Yeah, oh, I agree. It's when you have it in the game, it's wonderful. But when you don't have it, you notice it right away. Oh, and I hope they
how are you today?
I hope they fix that in the next Elder Scrolls game. All right.
Now, last aspect of Chaiden Hall that we should talk about has to do with a well and an abandoned house.
Ah, yes.
Now, most people come to Chaiden Hall in terms of being players of this game, not for the beautiful scenery, the covered bridges, the Mage's Guild, Fighter's Guild, or to visit the painter. They come here for darker aspects. Lucien the Chance has given them an opportunity to join the Dark Brotherhood. Now, as a noble paladin, I very much figure that you're probably not a member of that already.
No, not on this character. Not this one. I have a different character though in this game that did become a member and is actually trying to get through the quests for that. And I'm almost done with it, by the way. So.
Yes, it is one of my favorite quest lines. Just like with Skyrim, it does have that that feel though that. You get to a point and you're just very sad and you almost can't go on with the quest line. That you've grown so attached to characters and you just don't want to finish it because or go on to that next step if you've played through it. It's very heart-wrenching quest line, I think, to play through.
This is this is it right here, the abandoned house and the well that you use in order to get into the Dark Brotherhood Sanctuary.
Yep. Now, after the events of ESO, Chadenhall is sacked again. This time it is found in the books by Greg Keyes, The Lord of Souls, the second book, where Umaril, the floating city island that generates soulless undead as it floats over them, have supposedly attacked Chadenhall and destroyed parts of it, or most of it. I'm still reading through the book, so I can't talk much about it. But we do know that sometime in the Fourth Era, that much of Chadenhall has been rebuilt. And we find this out in the game of Skyrim, when we go through and read through Cicero's journals. Cicero's Journal, Volume 2, The Fifth of Last Seed, we received word today. The Wayrest Sanctuary was raided and destroyed by the Kossars. There are no survivors. There are now only three active Dark Brotherhood strongholds remaining. The Chadenhall Sanctuary here in the Imperial Province, a remote sanctuary located in a forest in Skyrim, and the Corinthe Sanctuary in Elsewhere. And so he goes on to talk about his time in Chadenhall before he and the Night Mother move on to the game of Skyrim.
That's the door right here. Ancient black door to Dark Brotherhood Sanctuary. Probably the creepiest door you'll ever see. That is it, though. We won't go in. All right, Mike. So as I sort of fumble around over here trying to get myself out of this abandoned house... is there anything else in Chadenhall that you want to call attention to before we move on?
So we have covered the Brushwood Death, we've covered the Dark Brotherhood, we have talked a little bit about the Mages Guild, and as you know, with all of the Mages Guilds, each of them has a specialty. In Chadenhall, the specialty of the Mages Guild here is alteration. So for those that need to ease burden, to increase their carry weight, because I know we are all hoarders. Anybody who plays Elder Scrolls complains about being Skyrim hoarders, Oblivion hoarders, the fact that ESO doesn't give us enough space. This is the place to go if you need ease burden or any of the other increased carry weight spells.
Okay. All right. Well, hopefully you've enjoyed that. I thought that was very good. Thank you for all the research on that, Mike. And I'll tell you, next time I walk into Chadenhall while playing the game, I certainly will have a greater appreciation for it because you walk in these places and you're like, you take it for granted. You know, it's a place that has a quest, but not until you start looking into some of the details here.
Especially when you think about how well these guys went through and looked at, what the structure of this place. The Mooton Bailey traditional keep on a hill with a fortified structure beneath it. In the case of this, a fortified walled city. with the architecture that's a merger of Cyrodiilin and styles of Morrowind that in the game is given as different areas of Europe, really gives you a new appreciation for what's going on in this game as they develop each of the cities.
It always you know, astounds me at how much detail Bethesda puts into these games, and just considering, you know, all the things that we spoke, like, look, there are the spires that you know you had spoken of, and you can see the moat as well around here, and parts where even the moat has dried up for because of disuse. Taking into account the geography of it all, I mean, it's close to Morrowind. They kept that in mind and when building Chaiden Hall, so it's amazing stuff. It really is. So thank you so much, man, for bringing this to us today.
And we have to thank the Imperial Library, the unofficial Elder Scrolls pages, and the Elder Scrolls Wiki. You know, they do a wonderful job of consolidating all of this information, you know, beyond just us playing the game for hours and hours and hours. You know, if you need to know something or find out somebody's name, those are always the best places to go.
All right, Mike, you ready for the fast question?
I am ready whenever you are.
Think fast. Is 100 hours in an Elder Scrolls game enough?
Enough for what? Enough for me to get out of Helgen? Enough for me to get out of the sewers? I would say, oh, heck no.
I agree. No, it is not. But I guess the next natural question is why? Why would that not be the case? Why is 100 hours, or as we saw in our former discussion, just playing a pure mage or a pure fighter or a pure anything? Why is that not enough if you want to experience an Elder Scrolls game?
I would have to say it's all of the options that it gives you. I mean, I have played all kinds of role-playing games over the years, and they're many times very linear. Go do this, go do that. You know, follow this path. You've completed this area. Move on to the next area. With the Elder Scrolls, I mean, you can step out and decide, okay, my last playthrough of Skyrim, I decided I wanted to look into the alchemy. So I spent most of the time walking around the countryside, picking flowers and ingredients, building an alchemy skill level up to 100. You know, it had nothing to do with the main quest. It had nothing to do with any of the guilds. Right now, you know, my guy is working on the Dark Brotherhood, so I'm going through all of that in Oblivion with the Dark Brotherhood, you know, and he is 97 hours, and I am just picking up the drop quests from Lucian the Chancellor. You have to go and find them after the sanctuary has been cleaned.
Let's get this over with! And, stupid NPC. Sorry.
I hope he's not talking about the podcast.
I know, right? Jeez.
Let's get this over with.
Let's get this over with.
Oh, shit today. Come on.
Shut up, you stupid bandit. Jeez. that was awesome. All right. No, I completely agree with you. You know, 100 hours is insane. It's an insane amount of time that you're not spending in the game. You know, this game is so much more than just the one style you want to play or just the simple 100 hours, which is a ridiculous amount of hours in gaming these days. Most guys, you know, most outfits out there, they build their game for 20, 25 hours, and that's your action game. Yeah. That's your action game. 20 hours. You know, I play through the whole game. 100 hours, that's, you know, more than four times that amount.
Oh, yeah.
It's five times that amount, and it's still not enough.
I mean, to give you an example, I love the Lego games, this past Christmas, I got Lego Marvel Super Heroes.
Okay.
And I finished it that weekend. And it, you know, had come out, and it was $60-something dollars for that game. To what, 16 to 20 hours worth of game time? Yeah, you know, and it's like, you know, there's nothing left to do other than go around and, you know, pick up extra characters. There's no more story left. Now, with this, I mean, with Skyrim, my new Skyrim character, who I think is level 19, I'm finally getting to the point after 1,000 hours of experiencing the Stormcloak's side of the story. Yeah. You know, mainly because I feel you have to be a Nord in order to play the Stormcloaks, because everybody else should side with the Empire if they're elves. Yeah, so 1,000 hours Skyrim, and I'm just getting to that point where I'm experiencing the Nord side of Skyrim.
Yeah, and I sort of think that if you're looking at hours-wise, 1,000 hours is probably right where you want to hit if you want to say that, you know, you've done a good job at, you know, going through and exploring certain things. But really, it's more than that, too. It's how does this game... The game feels differently when you play it as a mage or a thief or a fighter. And it feels differently when you have a hybrid class, too. And, you know, what are those differences? Well, you know, guess what? You got to play the game in order to figure that out. And just things are just completely react totally differently to you. And you react totally different to it based on those choices of gameplay, which is,
oh, definitely,
you know, a huge strength of these games.
And, you know, at any given time during the game, you can switch things up. My current Oblivion character is a bow and then offhands to a sword and shield. But then I realized that my destruction class was very low, and it was one of my main requirements in the game. And so I was like, okay, I had better start using destruction spells. So changed everything up to start, you know, leveling destruction. Gives it a whole other feel.
Whole other feel. And it's still magic. Like, you're still playing as a mage, but it's just a different school of magic, and it makes the game feel different. So,
yeah,
you know, off the cuff, 100 hours, you haven't even scratched the surface yet.
Yeah. You might have completed a quest.
Right.
Line, maybe if you're lucky.
The right way. All right. We have an email that came in from the community. Mike, would you mind reading that, please?
Okay. So the email, hello crew, I was listening to one old episodes of Elder Scrolls OTR and Classic. I was wondering if you prefer the next Elder Scrolls game to be more contemporary fantasy like Skyrim, or more high fantasy like Morrowind. Also, I don't have ESO, but does it feel more contemporary or high fantasy? Thanks for all that you do, Armand. So,
what do you think, Mike?
He's asking about, you know, high fantasy versus contemporary. I think it really depends on the setting. If it was to return to someplace like Daggerfall area or maybe the deserts of Alkir or someplace along that, I would say it'd probably have to be more contemporary. But I think if we start looking at the realms of the High Elves or the Khajiit or Black Marsh, we really have to go fantasy-like.
Yeah.
Because they're going to be so foreign to what the, you know, we as humans experience in our own world. I mean, you know, I don't know about you, but I don't have gills and can breathe underwater with a tail. I definitely, you know, while being Italian, you know, don't need to shave like there's no tomorrow just to keep the hair down, you know, like a cat. And the High Elves culture there, I mean, you know, I expect to see, you know, if you were to go into the Isles there, that you're going to see, like, the crazy, magic-infused things that you just are going to boggle people's minds.
Yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. When you go into Elder Scrolls Online, you know, he asks the question, does it feel like contemporary or does it feel like fantasy? It depends on where you're in, what area you're in. When I played through the Aldmeri Dominion area, it was absolutely high fantasy. Absolutely. But now that I'm in the Ebonheart Pact territory, which is, you know, Morrowind, Skyrim areas, it's when you're looking at Skyrim, it does look a little bit more contemporary. It's got that Skyrim feel to it. And Morrowind is oddly enough, Morrowind kind of echoes that as well.
I was really expecting more. I don't know. exoticness from ESO's Morrowind areas.
Yeah.
Dishan area feels very much, you know, like something I could see in the real world. Now, Stonefall, that's completely inhospitable with the lava and the crazy mushrooms and all that stuff. So that's high fantasy, definitely.
Yeah. And even that, I could, I would go a little bit more. I would turn that dial toward the high fantasy a little bit more, in my opinion, because when you play Morrowind, you definitely get that feeling of high fantasy, and it's sort of missing a little bit when you think hard about it in Elder Scrolls Online in that area, but. Not that I think it's out of place or anything. It's just the game Morrowind compared to, you know, the areas that you do see in Elder Scrolls Online are a little bit tuned down.
Yeah, I would say that across the board. When you start in Auradon as part of Somerset Isles, I really expected not stonework, but crystalwork. You know, where you have these, you know, beautiful white marble arches here for these aliens that you're seeing now. And I really expected to see, you know, just amazing amounts of marble and crystal and things that float, you know, by magic and suspended with magic. Things of that nature versus the more contemporary stonework, I guess.
Yeah.
And then with the wood elves, I thought that was really, really cool. Having their space high up in the trees, the little huts attached to the trees, kind of reminded me of Endor a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it until you mentioned it.
But then when we got to Reaper's March, I really felt like, I think part of it has to do with the character models that it really needed to have. You know, like the large cat breed of Khajiit that they ride. More, you know, native flora and fauna that would be unique to the area to give it more of that high fantasy type of effect.
Right.
Especially when you read in the novels. They trade in their horses because the horses aren't going to be any good for them in the deserts of elsewhere. Yeah, I'm sure that'll come with ESO, but in the new game that will come, if they were to place it in elsewhere, they definitely have to have that kind of fantastical fauna that we aren't really seeing.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't gotten into elsewhere yet in Elder Scrolls Online. We haven't even really seen it in any other game either, so... the first time we get a good look at that is going to be something special. That's for sure.
Reaper's March is that no man's land type of thing. It's, you know, part Valenwood, part Cyrodiil, part elsewhere.
Yeah, but
it's a flavor of each. But
it is. But I don't really consider it elsewhere simply because it is such a hybrid. And you know, when you hear about elsewhere, they do say that the grand majority of it is you know. Sweeping deserts with oases or an oasis or multiple oasi. I don't know what the plural of that is, but all right. That's Mike's first show for Classic Elder Scrolls Night. Everyone give Mike a round of applause. He did a phenomenal job. Congratulations. And, looking forward to recording many, many more with you.
Oh, me too.
Final thoughts. Let's start with Mike.
So my final thoughts, I had a blast doing this. I got to learn a lot about Shadenhall and Oblivion aspects that I really wouldn't have delved into, you know, just going from quest to quest to quest. So this has been really a fun venture for me to explore more of the games that I love. And not just, you know, the cursory glance at them as, you know, you travel around, but really digging deep into what's going on there. And as a painter, it allows me to walk around more and take more screenshots. So, you know, more subjects for more paintings to come.
I'm really looking forward to your Shadenhall piece. 4 for sure. I can't wait to see that. So, my final thought. Hey, you know what, Mike? You did a fantastic job for your first show. I know what it's like. I remember that, and you did an amazing job. So, pat on the back for yourself, sir. You definitely deserve it. And also, this being your first podcast, and you did your first segment ever. It was amazing. You did a fantastic job. I love the history behind this stuff, and delving into it like that just makes it me feel more real, more tangible. And I really appreciate all the work you've done.
Thank you. And thank you for having me on and, you know, giving me this opportunity.
Oh, of course. Elder Scrolls.
I'm really looking forward to our next episode here as to where we're going to be exploring.
Yeah, in 2 weeks from tonight, that'll happen.
Yep.
Classic Elder Scrolls Night is now on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, guys. And I am very excited to have that happen. It was a bit late for me, having it on Fridays at 9. And you know what? It was that way because I wanted to accommodate my hosts at the time. And now that that's changed, I'm really excited that it's at this time. It's much more manageable for my schedule and reduces the amount of stress for me, which means that I can enjoy the time doing this and playing the game and having fun with everyone here. The chat room. Chat room, you are fantastic tonight. Thank you for being there for Mike's first show. And hopefully, probably, next episode, we're going to introduce our final host to carry on the torch of Classic Elder Scrolls Night, one of the most beloved shows that we have here on QGN. So,
now, here's something in the chat that just popped up from Martin. FYI, 2 weeks is Labor Day. So keep an eye on Twitter, I guess.
Yeah.
And we'll let you know if we're going to be on that Monday. Or if we're going to have to move it one way or the other, Sunday or Tuesday, but hopefully we'll still have it.
Yeah, that's well. Oh yeah, that's right. That's going to be a busy. It's probably going to be a busy week for me at work.
Yeah.
Yeah, Labor Day is a tough one. Well, I'm glad we're talking about this now on the show because you know, everyone's watching now. So let's just say that Labor Day won't be the day, but hopefully it will be that week at some point. And just, you know, watch us at Quest Gaming on Twitter and at Elder Scrolls OTR. We'll say it on at Quest Gaming, and we'll retweet it on at Elder Scrolls OTR with what we're doing here. All right, guys. Well, as always, let me get a nice little shot here of this beautiful waterfall as we take the show out. That is gorgeous. Okay, let's not get the Minotaur.
don't draw another Minotaur towards you.
Right, no Minotaur. Minotaurs are bad. They're bad for my health.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, thanks again for joining us. Thank you for listening, for watching us on YouTube, and for being here live. Take care, everyone. Be safe. And as always, may the Force be with you.